I'd like to begin this morning with a familiar poem by the Persian poet Rumi. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. During the adult forum this year, we read a book by the American Buddhist nun Pema Chodron. This morning, I'd like to talk about what I learned from this series and how these Buddhist teachings underscore our Unitarian Universalist faith. Those opening words by Rumi perfectly capture the emotions I experienced this year when Red and I moved away from Galveston and back to Bay Cliff. For some months, we had been discussing the possibility of moving back to the house that we had lived in for 15 years. We both loved it here in Galveston, and we loved our old house. But we realized that that house was probably too big for us, and we could see that pretty soon we were going to have difficulties going up and down the stairs. We also both missed living on the bay, on the water. Of course, Red was ready to move before I was. The novelty of maintaining the yard and a 100-year-old house had worn off for him. He also had a very strong argument in the fact that the Bay Cliff house was paid for. So, as usual, part of my decision-making process was to make a list, pros and cons, Bay Cliff versus Galveston. Not much of a contest. But I had to admit that the practical reasons for moving outweighed the sentimental reasons for staying, and so I agreed that the move was probably the smart thing to do. But my heart was not in it. As everyone knows, moving is hard enough. Sorting through what to keep, what to throw away, what can be donated. Then there's the packing. And on top of that was the chore of getting the house ready to put on the market. Deep cleaning. I can't believe we were able to breathe with the amount of dog hair I found behind and under the furniture. And all the while I was packing and cleaning and painting over the scrapes the dogs had left on the doors, there was the overpowering sadness of leaving friends and community. Even though Bay Cliff is only 30 minutes away, I felt as though I were moving to Mars, and I didn't want to go. But I soldiered on. I packed, I cleaned, I discarded, I donated furniture, clothes, and kitchen utensils to the Attic Treasure Sale and to the Women's Center. Our house in Bay Cliff is not nearly as big as the Galveston house, so a lot of our furniture wouldn't fit. And the kitchen is apartment-sized, so I had to give away a lot of my dishes. I told myself that this was the time in my life I should be downsizing, that this would be good for me. And the feeling of letting go was freeing in some respects. Letting go of clutter was freeing. Letting go of the house was another thing altogether. I was attached to that old house, and I was very attached to the community I felt I was leaving. I suffered a lot during the month of June when we made the move. I even called on a therapist for advice. After a couple of sessions, she affirmed that I most likely wasn't crazy. The sense of groundlessness I was feeling was because I had been uprooted, she said. I actually was groundless. But even though I now had a professional diagnosis of maybe not crazy, I was still miserable. Then I heard that the Adult Forum was going to study Pema Chodron's book, Start Where You Are. The book begins like this. We have everything we need. There is no need for self-improvement. With the practices presented in this book, you can start just where you are. If you're feeling angry, poverty-stricken or depressed, the practices described here were designed for you because they will encourage you to use all the unwanted things in your life as the means for awakening compassion for yourself and others. These practices show us how to accept ourselves, how to relate directly with suffering, how to stop running away from the painful aspects of our lives. They show us how to work open-heartedly with life just as it is. Well, this was the perfect conversation for me to engage in at the time. I was experiencing loss, groundlessness, fear, anxiety, and profound sadness. I had a treasure trove of unwanted things in my life. Because the leaders in the adult forum are Unitarian Universalists and naturally intelligent, they asked Terry Conrad to lead our discussions. And thank God and the Buddha, he agreed. So I grabbed hold of that lifeline I was thrown and dove into the practice. You know, I've played at meditation off and on for a long time, but honestly, never with a real commitment. This time was different. I began to sit every day. And over the weeks, very subtly, I shifted. The Sunday morning discussions were invaluable. I was reminded during these sessions that we all suffer, that we all experience the same feelings. I was reminded that groundlessness is a common human experience. I was not alone in this feeling or in any of the other feelings that crop up every day. And I was reminded that it was our attachment to things staying the same that is the source of suffering. I also learned that peace can be found in breathing in and out, noticing your thoughts just as thoughts, and then letting go. I learned that everything in your everyday life is an opportunity for practice, a practice designed to wake us up, or in Buddhist terminology, pursuing the path of bodhicitta, the path of awakening and opening our heart. It was through these sessions that I realized how connected I was to our UU community, and that it is this connection that sources my faith. The heart of the book, Start Where You Are, is the Lojong practice and teachings. The Lojong practice, or mind training, has two elements. The first is the practice, which is called Tonglen meditation, and second is the teaching, which comes in the form of slogans. The Tonglen practice is a simple sitting meditation of being present to your breath, the practice of taking in and sending out, and noticing your thinking. Pema Chodron advises that when your mind wanders off, you say to yourself, thinking. Whether your thoughts are angry, wild, worrisome, and fearful, or spiritual, pleasing, and comforting, whatever your thoughts are, with gentleness and without judgment, simply label all those thoughts as thinking, and then come back to your breath. There is really a peace that comes with that practice. The second part of the practice is the teaching, which comes in the form of slogans, pithy statements that get right to the heart of how we live our lives. Pema Chodron introduces the slogans this way. To reverse ego's logic, we practice the warrior slogans of Atisha, a Tibetan teacher who lived in the 11th century. These slogans say things like, don't be jealous and don't gossip. They're not always the sort of thing you want to hear, let alone be inspiring. They aren't theoretical or abstract. The slogans are about who we are and what is happening to us. They are completely relevant to how we experience things and how we relate with whatever occurs in our lives. They are about how to relate with pain and fear and pleasure and joy, and how those things can transform us fully and completely. When we work with the slogans, ordinary life becomes the path of awakening. Now, the reality is, while we may think that meditating is enough, the proof of the pudding is in how we interact with people in our everyday lives. can be peaceful and wise when we're sitting alone, breathing in and out in a quiet room with no distractions. But how do we respond to the people who intrude on our lives and push our buttons? Well, the slogans provide instruction in how to respond to those button pushers. There are 59 slogans in the book. I will not list them all, but I would like to talk about a couple of the most irritating ones. The first one, drive all blame into one. This is very bad news. Drive all blame into one means that I am the one responsible for everything going on in my life. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm necessarily at fault for every bad thing that's ever happened to me, but it means that if I assume the perspective of being responsible, I can see that I have an ability to respond in a certain way. I can inquire into how I am contributing to whatever is going on in my life. How am I contributing to my own suffering or irritation or sense of isolation and anxiety? Instead of blaming someone else, which incidentally is a lot more fun, I can look to myself as the source of what I'm experiencing. More specifically, I can look to my thinking as the source of my feelings and experience. You know, our right relations covenant, which is posted out in the foyer, and I'm sure you read it every time you come in the building, echoes this particular slogan. In this covenant, we all have promised to take responsibility for our speech, actions, and feelings. So the slogan, drive all blame into one, is the bad news and the good news. I am the one who is responsible for my relationships, so I am the one who can make a difference. The next slogan, and my personal favorite, is be grateful to everyone. This slogan is aimed right at your gut and it hits the mark. Be grateful to everyone is a way of saying that we can learn from any person and any situation, especially if we practice being awake to the lesson. The people and situations in our lives can help us see our default behaviors that we may use as protection. My default or my go-to defenses include sarcasm, withdrawal, and sometimes resignation. Be grateful to everyone is aimed at effecting a complete change of attitude. This slogan actually gets at the bottom of how we use avoidance to remain ignorant of our own shortcomings. We blame other people for the way we feel, and then consequently we add another layer of protection to our hearts and we distance ourselves from other people. The Dalai Lama said, "It's much more beneficial to see a shortcoming in yourself than in others." The people that push our buttons the most are usually the ones we're with every day. Husband, wife, partner, mother, father, child, coworker, friend. They're the ones we can't get away from. To quote my favorite psychiatrist, Lucy, from the Peanuts comic strip, "I love humanity, it's people I can't stand." We are trapped with these teachers until we get the lesson or we leave. The bad news is, if you leave the situation, you'll find another teacher in the next relationship. Remember, wherever you go, there you are. This gets even worse. The slogan, be grateful to everyone, is about making peace with the parts of ourselves that we don't like. If we were to make a list of the people we don't like, oh, Joel, maybe those right-wing Republicans. Those people that we find obnoxious or threatening or maybe even just irritating, we would find out a lot about the aspects of ourselves that we're blind to. If we were to come up with one word about each of the troublemakers in our lives, we might find a list of descriptions of our own negative qualities that we unknowingly project onto the outside world. Everybody sees it except me. In traditional teachings on Lojong, it's put another way. Other people trigger the karma that we haven't worked out. They mirror us and give us the chance to see all those old behaviors and attitudes we have that we're not conscious of. For example, when you're driving on the freeway and someone cuts in front of you, what do you say or do? My guess is you do not smile and say, "Oh, thank you for teaching me patience." Terry Conrad suggested to us in class that perhaps the person who's cut you off on the freeway is rushing because he has a sick child or some other kind of emergency, and that we could respond with compassion in that situation. Well, that sounded fine in class, and I nodded my head in wise, zen-like agreement. But the next morning, when a guy in a red pickup truck whooshed by me and then slowed down and nearly caused me to have a wreck, I heard myself saying, "I'll bet that jerk does not have a sick child." Admittedly, this is a tough lesson. It's hard to stop in the moment and ask yourself, what's the lesson in this? Why am I reacting like I am? It's often difficult for me to see that the person who cut me off on the freeway may very well be showing me that I'm often impatient and inconsiderate of other people, that I can be self-focused and caught up in my own little drama and blind to the needs and concerns of other people around me. But there is some good news. Pema Chodron reminds us that all of us have the inherent wisdom to find the right action and words in all of these situations. Of course, there's not a one-size-fits-all answer to every situation. It's a lifelong journey. The correct response in every situation requires that we are awake to the seduction of preserving our ego. We have to surrender to the situation and see what action is required to communicate with compassion. If you're in a relationship, and all of us are, you know by now that you can either be right all the time or you can be in a relationship. You can't do both. It's your choice. And as our poet Rumi said, "Yesterday I was clever, so I wanted to change the world. Today I am wise, so I'm changing myself." These slogans, all 59 of them, are instructions in how to live your life in a compassionate way, how to live your life in a way that helps you and others. They are instructions to help us become more awake to the loving nature inside each one of us. The training during the adult forum reminded me that I am not alone, that I am connected to a community of human beings that struggle and fail and also contribute remarkable acts of kindness and compassion. These sessions helped me shift from feeling isolated and lost to being enormously grateful for the community of this fellowship. So how does all this fit in with our Unitarian Universalist faith? Well, contrary to popular belief, Unitarian Universalists do believe in something. The Unitarian preacher of the mid-19th century, Theodore Parker, once said, "To know whom you worship, let me see you in your home. Let me hear you in your trade, how you get your money, how you keep it, how you spend it. This is the test of one's religion." Throughout our history, UUs have been concerned with how a person actually lives his life. We've understood that religion at its best is a tool for living with integrity and compassion. We believe that religion should challenge us to lead lives of meaning and purpose and to see what our part is in helping to make the world a better place. We are not bound by creeds or scripture. Our beliefs must come out of our understanding and experience, derived from whatever resources that we have found enlightening and useful. Our faith doesn't exist independent of, but in partnership with, life. So we must continually examine our belief in a truth that is open to new learning and fresh experience. In Buddhist terminology, we must strive to be awake. Our guiding principles of faith run parallel to the teachings of the Buddha. As you use, we affirm that we will engage in a responsible search for truth and meaning. We affirm that we respect the worth and dignity of every person. And we believe that human beings are inherently good. Now, given what's going on in the world today, it may be difficult to argue that human beings are inherently good. But the Unitarians who emerged in this country in the late 18th century rejected the Puritans' doctrine of the depravity of human nature. They looked at the evidence and concluded that human beings are innately good. They believed that human beings contained the seed of God, and that if ignorance, oppression, or poverty were removed, the human soul would grow closer and closer to its natural goodness. Our seventh principle affirms a promise to respect the interdependent web of life of which we are all a part. We believe that each one of us impacts every other person and everything else on earth. We are all connected. And it is respect for this connection that is the source of our faith and informs how we live our lives. Even though as UUs we pride ourselves on our individualism and uniqueness, the redeeming truth is we are not separate. It's a strong belief in this connection that sources my personal faith. I'd like to end with words by Albert Einstein. A human being is part of the whole, called by us the universe, a part limited in time and space. All of us experience ourselves, our thoughts and feelings, as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. So in the new year, I wish for all of us an abiding faith in the power of connection to a wider circle. I love you all. We stand and we'll sing together, What Wondrous Love, number 18.